Thursday, June 13th. Ayla Jutilainen Litviak entered the hangar promptly on time for the start of afternoon patrol, but inwardly she was already preparing herself for a wait. Her scheduled patrol partner today was Francesca Lucchini, and the Romanian was many things, but on time for patrol was not generally one of them. She was a bit puzzled to arrive and discover that Lucchini's Fiat Centaur Striker was gone, its retaining arms open and empty. Scratching her head, she looked around, then called to one of the Romanian ground crewmen. "Oi, where's Lucchini's Striker? Is there some kind of problem?" The man looked puzzled, then gave her an elaborate, almost Gallic, shrug and replied in a thick Romanian accent, "Tenente Lucchini, she already leave." "Eh?" Ayla glanced at her wristwatch, an Orushin Polyotch Dermansky, her wedding present and most prized possession, then crossed to the duty roster clipboard, which was hanging on the wall next to the big board showing the current status of all units on the base. Sure enough, she was right on time, and the status board confirmed the mechanic's claim. For whatever reason, Lucchini had left the castle some 20 minutes before their patrol was scheduled to begin, and she had done it alone. Ayla glanced up the board and saw that Colonel Sakamoto was out as well, having elected to lead the day's overlapping midday patrol herself. Grumbling, she went upstairs to report the matter to Perrine instead.
"I'm sorry, I don't think I can have heard you right," the 501st's deputy commander said, rising from behind her desk.
"Lucchini left early?"
"That's what I said," Ayla replied. "That's..."
Perrine took off her spectacles and polished them on her cravat, buying herself a little time to think. Then she put them back on and said,
"Well, I don't want to seem like I'm calling you a liar, Ayla, but that's preposterous."
"I know," Ayla agreed, waving her arms. Somewhere in the vicinity of Neuf-Brisach, Lucchini cruised happily along, congratulating herself on what was, after all, a stroke of brilliance. The higher-ups were always grumbling at her for being late for patrol, and she'd been dreading having to tool around for 4 hours listening to Ayla complain about the bear girl. By leaving early, she'd offset some of the former and completely dodged the latter. Genius. Sure, there was some trifling regulation about not going more than 10 kilometers from the castle alone, but, well, really? The Neuroi hadn't put in more than token appearances south of Route 59 for months, and high-level recce showed that the ruins of Freiburg were completely deserted. Even if one of their stragglers turned up out here, it would be no match for La Catina Nera. In the meantime, it was a beautiful day, and she amused herself by darting here and there among the clouds, chasing her shadow as it fell across the fluffy white. As she did so, she entertained the fanciful notion of what she would do if she ran across Yoshka's Neuroi friend, sightings of which had been piling up over the last few weeks in both the 501st sector and the 511th to the north. This was a bit to the south of her documented stamping ground to date, but still, who knew? She might turn up. That would be interesting. More interesting than listening to Ayla's indignation over not everyone in the world thinking Sonya was as amazing as she did, anyway. Lucchini had nothing against Sonya. In fact, she rather liked her. The fact that her schedule meant she was virtually always either asleep, or wishing she were, when Lucchini saw her, had given the Romanian the slightly wrong impression that the Orushin was as deeply devoted to that dark art as she was, which gave her an air of solidarity that was not altogether deserved. But however it came about, Lucchini was abstractly fond of her without really knowing her that well. So that wasn't really the problem. If anything, she agreed that Urbanovich was being a colossal jerk, never acknowledging Sonya's presence at dinner or if they happened to meet in the corridor. She just found Ayla's constant grumbling about it tiresome. Just punch her already, That's what Shirley would have done.
This somewhat elliptical train of thought was disrupted by a sudden glint of sunlight off a smooth surface, glimpsed momentarily in a gap between clouds. Lucchini arrested her latest swoop at her shadow, automatically unslinging her 30-caliber Browning machine gun from her back and chambering around. Apart from the growl of her own props, she didn't hear any engines. Concentrating for a moment, she searched the area with the short-range, rudimentary version of witch radar that was all most non-night witches could ever manage, and felt the indistinct, non-directional presence of Neroy somewhere in the vicinity. Grinning fiercely, she started forward again, heading up and over the illusorily massive heap of cloud ahead of her. Had she just caught a glimpse of Yoshka's Neroy-chan? Maybe she'd be the one to finally make contact. She crested the top of the cloud, and there on the far side of it waited not a tiny Neroy in the shape of a witch, but in fact a rather large one in what looked to her mind like the shape of a kite. Rather large. Really quite big indeed. Not big enough to put her off, though. Forgetting every protocol in her eagerness to join battle, she opened up her centaur to full power and dove on the unsuspecting-seeming target with a whoop of pure, aggressive joy. All mine. Some distance to the northwest, Mio Sakamoto and her patrol group were also enjoying the beautiful day, albeit not quite to the same sportive extent that Lucchini had been. In the lead, Mio looked back over her shoulder and considered her wingmen's formation. The first was right where she should be, and the elder Fuso witch felt an undeniable surge of pride at the sight of her there. It seemed like only yesterday that Yoshika Miyafuji was a fresh-faced, awkward rookie, all talent and no real skill. Today she was still just as fresh-faced as ever. In fact, she looked virtually the same, albeit a little taller, 2 months shy of her 17th birthday as she had when Mio first met her at 14. Her bearing in the air, though, was completely different, and in spite of her youth and her irrepressible grin, she looked like a real officer in her neat white jacket and perfectly maintained Shinden striker unit, with her Type 99 autocannon slung on her back and her lieutenant's shoulder boards glinting in the sunlight. A witch length behind her and a little farther to the left, the third member of their slightly overstrength patrol group was not quite as perfectly positioned, but Chris Barkhorn looked every bit as put together as her elders. Her striking resemblance to Yoshka was reduced somewhat by her different familiar and her different uniform and her Messerschmitt striker, but her natural flying talent was very similar, as was the way she couldn't keep the delight from her face. Sensing her commanding officer's eye upon her, she made an effort to impose more of a game face on herself, adopting an affected scowl that was probably an unconscious imitation of her elder sister Gertrude, but Mio's answering grin put paid to that soon enough. Yoshka caught the byplay and, as if she had sensed Mio's earlier thought about how officer-like she was now, broke formation to pull a gigantic, open-armed barrel roll around the whole group, coming up on Chris's left to nudge the young Carlslander with an elbow. "Isn't it a beautiful day, Chris-chan?" she asked. "The kind of day that makes you glad to be a witch." "Mm-hmm," Chris agreed, nodding, but then the conversation was interrupted by the voice of Perrine Klosterman on the radio. "Patrol 2 from Duchess, come in." Mio raised a hand to activate her combud. "Jingu here. Go ahead, Duchess." "Patrol 2, be advised. Haywire has sortied alone," said Perrine. "Chariot reported for patrol at the usual time and was informed that she'd already left. If she's on the right route, she'll be somewhere around Colmar by now. Keep an eye out." Mio cracked a faint smirk and replied, "As it were." Getting back only a stony silence that, she was fairly sure, was Perrine not pressing her push to talk because she was laughing, Mio went on, "Right, right. We'll find her. Jingu out. She lowered her hand and sighed, looking back over her shoulder. Well, great. I swear that kid's more trouble than she's worth.
You don't mean that, Yoshika chided her.
No, Mio agreed. But she's very, very frustrating some days. Then, throttling up, she said, All right, let's go take a look. She can't have gotten all that far.
Yaha!
Lukini cried as, with a long, rolling burst, she finally nailed the Neuroi's core and blew it apart. Pulling out of her dive, she savored that magical patang noise as the target's general structure followed, then hovered for a moment, catching her breath while its sparkling fragments drifted like snow toward the ruined cityscape not very far below. Wait. Ruined cityscape? Lowering her smoking machine gun, Lukini turned slowly in the air, looking around. She'd gotten so wrapped up in her pursuit of the Neuroi, which, though large, had been quite unexpectedly agile, that she'd completely lost track of where she was. She'd caught the odd glimpse of a built-up area out of the corner of her eye as she fought, and assumed that they were over Kolmar. But this place was a complete wreck, not the mostly rebuilt and entirely bustling little city of Kolmar. And it was utterly deserted. Oh, crap, she mumbled. This is Freiburg. Taking another turnaround, she tried to reorient herself. Yes, okay, there was the Rhine, and she was definitely on the wrong side of it. This was not a good place to be at the best of times, but particularly alone, low on magic, lower on ammo, and without even the slightest particle of authorization. Man, am I going to get it for this if anyone finds out, she thought, and started back toward the west. She decided not to climb back to cruising altitude until she'd crossed back over the river, in case any border spotters happened to be watching the higher skies. She might, after all, still get away with this woeful breach of protocol if she was canny about it. As she worked her way low above the ruined streets and Neuroi-chewed buildings of Freiburg, she suddenly realized that there was something moving at the edge of her vision to the left. And the right. Pausing, she drew upright again and made a third sweep of the horizon, and saw, to her growing horror, that Freiburg was not as deserted as Intel Division's reports might have led her to expect it to be. And now she had the answer to a rhetorical question they had posed on their last high-altitude photo assessment. Why have the Neuroi left the shells of so many buildings standing? Answer: because they made such good hiding places. Haywire to St. Ulrich, come in, she said, fighting to keep her voice level as the Neuroi, dozens of them, assembled in formation all around her, and something not too unlike panic welled up within her. An ear-ringing burst of static was her only answer. Not just dead air, but noise. Looking up, she realized that the metallic glinting all around her wasn't the settling remains of her quarry, which had long since dispersed. She reached out and plucked a piece of it from the air, a little rectangle of silvery metal foil, about 1 centimeter by 3. I saw this before, she thought, in the Ardennes, but they haven't used it since. Then she had no more time for wool gathering. She was too busy fighting for her life. Mio's first inkling that something strange was going on was when the radio started playing up. She had been calling periodically for Lukini as her patrol group moved southeastward, past Kolmar and toward the Rhine, but as they approached the river, the lack of response changed from dead air to a dull whistle, then a fitful crackling that reminded her of the bleed noise from distant lightning. That wasn't likely to be the case, not on a day as nice as this. No sign of anything like that kind of weather anywhere. Halting just short of the river, Mio switched her goggles to block the view of her normal eye and concentrated on her witch sight, peering off into enemy territory. Freiburg had been quiet for months, but the noise on the radio had gotten louder the closer they got, and now she saw why. The airspace over Freiburg was experiencing a storm, all right, but not of weather. The whole city was covered in a cloud of fluttering, twinkling little rectangles. It was, she realized, the stuff the Nuroi and the Ardennes had used during the previous fall's surprise counterattack. The slips of foil which the Liberians had later codenamed Chaff, and the Britannians called, for reasons that eluded Mio, Window. No one was quite sure how it worked even now, but it interfered with both ordinary radio transmissions and Nightwitch's magic radar. Producing it was evidently resource-intensive for the Nuroi, as there had been no recorded cases of its use since the failure of their all-in offensive in the Ardennes. For such a huge quantity of it to have been deployed over Freiburg, something really significant must be afoot. Mio looked harder, her mystic sight, unaffected by the chaff, penetrating deeper into the city, and after a few moments she spotted them. Nuroi, a half dozen large types and more medium and small drone units than she could count offhand, all of them swarming around a small target. For just a second, Mio thought their quarry, tiny and witch-shaped, must be Lucchini, and then, just as suddenly, she realized it wasn't. It was maneuvering as furiously as any witch would have been, trying desperately to stay ahead of all the beams and bolts of destructive energy the crowd of Nuroi were unleashing. But its moves were too geometric, too impossibly angular, to be any striker's flight path, particularly one operated by a flyer as inspired but technically unconstrained as Lucchini, whose moves were always bigger, rounder, more flamboyant than they really had to be. Whoever that was, she moved more like a small Nuroi than a witch. Because it was a small Nuroi. While Chris and Yoshka hovered there, waiting for her to tell them what she saw, Mio considered what to do. She would never have believed she would someday find herself considering flying to a Nuroi's rescue, even that of one Yoshka so staunchly insisted was not an enemy of which kind. But the creature was so clearly all the other's target, so desperately outclassed, and Mio had never doubted the essential truth of the old saying, "My enemy's enemy is my friend." Besides which, Lucchini was still missing, and though Mio couldn't see her anywhere, she knew in her bones that her Romagnan colleague was unlikely to be anywhere else but in the middle of the biggest batch of trouble in the area. Her decision made, she switched her goggles back, pivoted on her props, and said, "Mio Fuji, it looks like your friend is having a little trouble with her old team." Yoshka looked puzzled, then her eyes went wide. "Nuroi-chan? She's in trouble?" "Looks that way. She's up against at least a half dozen large types and who knows how many drones."
"We have to help her," Yoshka declared, moving forward a few feet, her fists clenched before her chest. "Sakamoto-san, I know you've never believed in her, but please."
"Relax, Mio Fuji. I'm with you this time." She chuckled. "Maybe I just can't stand an unfair fight. Barkhorn, return to base. Mio Fuji and I are entering enemy airspace. It's no place for a rookie." The only response Chris gave was to remove her MG-42 from her back, set her jaw, and reply, "Respectfully, Colonel, am I a combat witch of the 501st or not?" Mio stared hard at her for a moment, but was unable to prevent herself from smiling just a little. "Because what I really needed in my life was two Barkhorns," she said to no one in particular, and then, "Base, this is Jingu. If you can hear me, we're investigating a major disturbance in Freiburg airspace. We're liable to be pretty heavily outnumbered, but we'll do our best to keep from getting boxed in. Send backup if you can." Transmission complete, she listened for a second,
got nothing but static, and shook her head. Nothing. All right, let's go, you two. Barkhorn, stay close. Be ready to run for it. There's too many of them for us to take on by ourselves if they all decide to come after us. A trace of fear. This is really it. Crossed the younger Barkhorn's face, but she shoved it down and covered it with a look that would have made her elder sister proud as she primed her machine gun and said, Ready. They hit the aerial battlefield with guns blazing, the buzzsaw snarl of Chris's MG-42 counterpointing the deeper, more measured thump-thump-thump of the two Fuseau Witches Type 99 cannon. The Nuroi, all their attention concentrated on their tiny, elusive target, seemed taken by surprise. They scattered as a number of their drones were torn apart by the Witches' fire, opening a path for them to swoop in and form up with the witch-shaped Nuroi. She, too, seemed surprised to see them, if her body language could be relied upon. She drew back as if expecting them to attack, then tilted her head inquisitively as she realized they were backing her up.
Nuroi-chan!
Yoshka cried, pulling up alongside her.
Is it really you? What's going on? And where have you been?
Not really the time, Miyafuji, Mio said tensely, hovering back to back with her. See if you can convince it to come with us, and let's get out of here while they're regrouping. Come on, Yoshka said, too caught up in the crisis to take exception to Mio's choice of pronouns. We have to get away from here. There are too many for us to fight by ourselves. To Yoshka's surprise, Nuroi-chan shook her head.
What? Why not? Why can't you leave?
In response, the Nuroi witch pointed downward. Yoshka looked, tipping forward on her props a bit, then gasped. On the roof of the building over which they were all hovering, a familiar form lay sprawled, motionless, like a discarded doll.
Lukini!
Yoshka cried. Damn. Mio spat. So much for escaping. Miyafuji, get down there and see what you can do for her. Barkhorn, stick close to me. I think this is about to get hairy as hell.
Roger,
Chris replied, tightening her grip on her machine gun. Shoulder to shoulder with Mio, she watched the swirling horde of smaller Nuroi as they finished gathering around their more massive fellows, then pivoted as one, and commenced a massed attack run on the witches.
Here they come!
Mio cried, and then she drew the shorter of the two swords on her back with her left hand, one-handing her Type 99 with her right, and launched herself into a head-on counterattack with her young Karlslander colleague right behind her. Yoshka swooped down and bailed out of her shinden without ever really stopping, literally hitting the roof running. One look at Lukini's condition as she approached had told her she couldn't afford even the minor magical expenditure necessary to keep the striker running. The Romanian witch was sprawled face down on the cracked asphalt of the roof, her once white Sovrana Aeronautica officer's jacket soiled with soot, tar, and blood in about equal proportions. Half of her centaur striker was completely gone, the other half smashed and plainly inoperable. In its condition, the leg inside it was almost certainly broken. Her familiar's ears and tail had gone, either because she'd exhausted her magic, or just from the shock of her wounds. Yoshka pounded to a halt next to Lukini, dropped to her knees, and summoned her healing power, pushing it outward into a luminous blue hemisphere that surrounded them both. The first touch of her magic against her colleague's body filled her with simultaneous relief and dread. Relief because Lukini was alive. Dread because that one touch confirmed most of Yoshka's second-worst fears about her condition. This was going to be a tough job. Probably the toughest she'd ever accomplished under fire. There was no way she was going to be able to restore Lukini to fighting fitness, not out here. The best she could hope for would be to stabilize the Romanian's condition so that she would survive the trip back to St. Ulrich.
Then, with the non-magical medical staff's help, she could set about effecting more comprehensive repairs. She concentrated hard, burying her concern for Sakamoto-san and Chris-chan. Her comrades were hopelessly outnumbered and outgunned. They could hope to win this fight together no more than Lukini could have, alone or with Nuroi-chan to help her. If Yoshika didn't work quickly and well, and find some way of clearing the area fast while carrying an unconscious patient afterward, it was entirely possible that all five of them would be killed. Breath, focus, control, she thought, employing one of the concentration techniques Sakamoto-san had taught her as part of her training in Hikō Majō Kenryu. Her breathing and the fast, thready beat of Lukini's heart became the only sounds in her world, shutting out the roar and shriek of the battle raging above her. Repair only the most critical damage. Don't try to make anything perfect. Not here, not now. Perfect is for later. Alive is for now. How long it took, she could never have said. Time, like the outside world, became meaningless to her when she sank this deeply into the healing fugue. But eventually she came to the realization that she had done enough, or at least that she had done all she could do in this place and time. If Yoshika could get her back to the castle and its sickbay soon, Lukini would live. If not, she would die. The distinction was stark and simple, absolute and completely absent any trace of compromise. Pulling herself back to the surface, Yoshika opened her eyes and saw a Nuroi beam the width of a city street carve across the roof, obliterating her shinden as it tracked toward her. Crying out with dismay, both for the loss of her striker and the imminent danger, she struggled to shift her mental and magical gears, summoning up her shield. Her response was a little sluggish. She'd poured so much effort into stabilizing Lukini that even her famed reserves were low, and changing from one spell to another after holding her mental grip on the first for so long was always a challenge. A shield circle did appear in the air above her, but it wasn't her own. It was not witch blue, but Nuroi red, and instead of runes in the turning circle around its outer edge, it had what looked like the tracery of angled light paths that sometimes appeared on Nuroi hulls when viewed in certain light. It did the same job, though, deflecting the plasma beam to carve across the roof to one side, then spend itself against the face of the building across the street.
Mio Fuji!
Mio cried, seeing how near that large type's attack had come. Only the intervention of the witch Nuroi, hovering four square above the kneeling witch and her fallen comrade with shield raised, had prevented Mio from losing two of her dearest friends in an instant. In that instant, all doubt about the intentions of that one aberrant Nuroi disappeared from Mio Sakamoto's mind, never to return. Her decision was not conscious, but, like many of her most critical ones, it was unequivocal, and it was final. Teeth gritted, she turned in the air and, without really thinking about it, threw her Type 99 to Barkhorn. Chris one-handed her MG-42, and caught it without missing a beat, then vectored around her and opened up with both weapons on a second large type that was trying to flank them. Even under the circumstances, the seamlessness with which they had accomplished that unrehearsed move brought a tiny, fierce element of a smile to the mask of fury on Mio's face as she reached to her back with her newly freed right hand and drew Hagane Kaze.
Mio Fuji, get out of here!
She roared, diving on the big Nuroi that had just tried to vaporize Yoshika and Lukini.
We'll cover you! Go!
My striker, Yoshika began, but Mio had already flashed past, her Shidenkai's stacks flaming, and raked the large type's underbelly with a double strike from Hagane Kaze and Repu Maru. Rising slowly, a bit unsteadily, to her feet, Yoshika turned to Nuroi-chan, who descended slowly to the rooftop before her. For a moment, Witch and Nuroi stood regarding each other silently, as if oblivious to the battle raging around and above them.
"If I don't get my friend back to our base soon," Yoshka explained softly, "she'll die. I don't know if you have a concept of death, or even if you can understand what I'm saying right now. But please, if you do understand, if you want to be our friend, then can you help me?"
Nuroi-chan's blank face gazed impassively at her for a moment. Turning her head slightly, the Nuroi witch looked past Yoshka to Lukini's fallen form, then back to Yoshka's tear-streaked, wide-eyed face. Then she raised her hand, extending her curious cylindrical fingers in an unmistakable gesture. Yoshka hesitantly raised her own, reaching to meet the Nuroi's. They had, she remembered, had this moment once before, on her inscrutable visit to the Nuroi Hive over the English Channel. Just before their fingers would have touched, the warlock had attacked, destroying both the Hive and, Yoshka had thought at the time, Nuroi-chan. Yoshka had never seen her again. When she reappeared and then fell over Venezia, the Fuso witch had been back in her homeland, in exile, though she hadn't known that at the time. Now their fingers touched, then slid together, until she felt her palm press against the cool smoothness at the base of the Nuroi's rough sketch hand. And Yoshka's eyes went even wider as the single most amazing thing that had ever happened to her happened to her. Chateau St. Ulrich. Most of the witches who weren't out on patrol had gathered in the hangar by this point, concerned by the lack of any signal from any of their fellows in the field. The control tower had received a fragmentary transmission from Mio, something about Freiburg, but it had been so broken up that nothing more could be gleaned from it, and since then, nothing, neither from her and her patrol group nor from Lucchini. Griffin emerged from fuel storage with the HE-162 on his back, fastening the chin strap of his helmet as he came. Mina strode beside him, her determined look not quite covering her concern as she told him, "You and Shirley can get there fastest. Check it out, and if you have to, fly back until you clear the jamming and report. We have to know what's going on out there." "Right," Griffin agreed. Going to the weapon racks, he selected a Type 99, having long preferred its slightly more deliberate rate of fire, then took a bandolier of 4 Karlslandic M24 hand grenades for good measure. "We're on it," Shirley agreed, slipping into the embrace of her personalized P-51D. "With my spiteful, I'm very nearly as fast as Shirley," Lynn spoke up. "I can follow them up for long-range support."
"Good idea," Perrine agreed. Mio said nothing, only nodded. Perrine was the 501st's ranking officer on the scene, so the disposition of forces was technically her prerogative right now, not the general's, even if she had stepped in through a combination of concern and force of habit. Before anyone could make any further suggestions, a figure dove on the castle from the south, swooped across the apron, and halted, hovering, in the center of the open hangar doors. Turning to look, the witches drew back, pointed, or readied weapons, as their instincts varied. The figure was the witch-like Nuroi, and cradled in her arms, battered and bloodied, was the limp form of Francesca Lucchini.
"Lucchini!" cried Shirley.
Then, her face contorting in a most uncharacteristic snarl, she grabbed her Browning automatic rifle from the rack and darted forward, bringing the weapon to bear.
"Damn you, what have you done?" she demanded, tears in her eyes. "Some of us believed in you."
"Shirley-san, wait," the Nuroi replied, and to everyone's confusion, her voice, slightly flattened and metallic as if speaking over a PA system, was Yoshka's.
It's not what you think, Yoshka's voice continued, and then the onlookers got still a further shock as the Neroi's head suddenly deconstructed, breaking up into thousands of interconnected small pieces that drew back and away to reveal Yoshka's face, framed as though in some kind of strange helmet.
Yoshka, Lin gasped. What's happened? Are you...
No, no, Lin-chan, I'm fine. This is just... It's like a suit. Lin opened her mouth to ask a follow-up question, but Yoshka shook her head and plowed on.
Anyway, there's no time. Lukini-chan has to get to sickbay right now, and Sakamoto-san and Chris-chan need help. They're in Freiburg. Dozens of Neroi. It was a trap.
Hölle und Verdammnis,
Von Hammer spat. Hannelore, get on the comm and declare a broken arrow to the other units in the area, Mina said, her face a mask of Karlslandic self-control as the Elder Witch left the hangar at a run. The rest of you, scramble! Unnoticed behind Mina, Truda's face had drained of color as she realized what Yoshka was saying. Mio and Christian, deep in enemy territory and surrounded by hostile Neroi. Before anyone else could react to the scramble call, Barkhorn had turned on her heel and was sprinting to the launch stages, but not towards the one where her FW-190 was waiting. Instead, she leapt the crash bars of the stage that held Von Hammer's ME-262, the ears and tail of her familiar appearing as the jet's engines came to life. Without bothering to ask permission, or even to call for takeoff clearance, she slammed her hand down to release the launch stage's interlocks, grabbed the paired 30mm cannons Von Hammer had set in the adjacent armory rack, and blasted out of the hangar. Eri Productions Unlimited, Flying Yak Studios, and Bacon Comics Group, in association with the International Police Organization and Avalon Broadcasting System, presented Undocumented Features Future Imperfect, Lensman, the Brave and the Bold, Our Witches at War, Episode 14, Contact. Written and directed by Benjamin D. Hutchins, Matt Wagner, and the EPU Usual Suspects. Based on characters from Strike Witches, created by Humikane Shimada. Bacon Comics Chief, Derek Bacon. In the control tower, as she prepared to sound the alert to all Allied air stations in the sector, Von Hammer saw her Striker unit leave without her. Snatching up the binoculars from the console, she focused on the fast-departing unit, and when she saw who had taken it, she felt herself go pale. With a curse, she snatched up the radio mic and thumbed down the transmitter key. Down in the hangar, everyone looked up from their hurried launch preparations as Von Hammer's voice on the squadron's tactical band was relayed through the PA.
Weiss-Fünf, beware! That unit is not limited. Repeat, not limited!
There was a pause while she waited for a reply. When none came, her voice rang out again.
Weiss-Fünf, acknowledge!
Still no response, and Erica Hartman's eyes were fixed on the speaker, a look of horror dawning on her face.
Weiss-Fünf, come in!
Von Hammer cried. And then, in as plaintive a tone as anyone present had ever heard from her,
Truda!
Our Witches at War will continue.